Chapter 4, The Evidence of Birds and Fish.
PBS drops science film on intelligent design from website. PBS has pulled from its website a science film examining the theory of intelligent design, after selling the film for 2 years on its website, and airing it on dozens of PBS stations across the country. Unlocking the Mystery of Life is a 58-minute program exploring what DNA reveals about the origin of life and documents how some scientists are skeptical about naturalistic explanations for the origin of genetic information and looking to theories of design instead. Employing state-of-the-art computer animation and other visuals, the documentary follows the development of intelligent design theory through interviews with key design scientists. Rob Crowther, director of communications for Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, said, "This really begins to smack of message suppression when you realize how much PBS invests in promoting Darwinian evolutionary theory. With all the millions and millions of dollars PBS has spent during the past few years producing and airing the evolution series, and training teachers how to use it in the classroom, you have to wonder why they are discriminating against a science film that has a different view of the evidence." He continues, "It's chilling that suddenly in the midst of a national debate over intelligent design, PBS, funded by taxpayer dollars, decides to suppress an educational film that provides a scientific examination of the theory. At a time when many in the public are wondering what intelligent design theory is, here comes PBS deciding what the public will learn about intelligent design and what it won't."
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I sure find it interesting how PBS is not only trying to keep a lid on the issue of intelligent design, but they're doing it in the midst of a great public outcry to want to learn about it. I mean, gee whiz, if you're a public broadcasting system that's supported by the public, then maybe you should broadcast what the public wants to hear, you know what I'm saying? But not only that, as we've been seeing, those who are deliberately trying to suppress the truth, like it appears PBS is doing here, what are they actually doing? They're actually storing up the wrath of God. And how many of you would say that's probably not a good thing to do? Therefore, in order to help you and I to become the most effective witnesses we can for Jesus Christ, and help these folks out, that's right, we're going to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And what we're doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And the first evidence God left behind for us showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And so far we've seen four evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world, and that was the evidence of the universe, the evidence of the solar system, the evidence of the human body, and then in the last chapter the evidence of the animal kingdom. And there we saw several large and small mammals that clearly showed they not only were, but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent designer. Why? Because anybody who's not dumber than a box of hair knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, you're so intelligent. But that's right, believe it or not, did you know that large and small mammals are not the only animals showing God's intelligent design? The third group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the birds. But hey, don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 1:20-23. "And God said, Let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning the fifth day."
Now folks, according to our text, I think it's pretty clear. The Bible says that God not only created the land animals as we saw last week, but He also created the what? The flying and aquatic animals, the birds and fish, right? But the problem is, what does evolution teach? Do they say, oh yeah, look at all those amazing birds and fish that God created? Are you kidding? They say look at all those birds and fish that two cells and chance created, right? Therefore, I'd say we better take a look at not just the scriptural evidence but the scientific evidence of the birds and see just who's telling the truth. How about you? People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the flying creatures out there, and you tell me if they accidentally hatched onto the scene.
The woodpecker. Most of us know that woodpeckers spend most of their time pecking on trees, making homes, and looking for food, but what most of us don't know is how they can do this. First of all, a woodpecker hammers wood at the rate of 15 to 16 times a second, a rate of fire that's nearly twice as fast as a submachine gun, which means its head is traveling twice the speed of a bullet. This means the forces of stress on its head is equivalent to 1,000 times the force of gravity, which is more than 250 times the force an astronaut is subjected to in a rocket liftoff. So the question is, how does the woodpecker withstand such forces and keep from beating its brains out? Well, the woodpecker skull just so happens to be extra reinforced with bone that prevents its head from breaking into pieces. Then it just happens that its bill is stronger than most birds that keep it from crumbling apart after a few pecks. In fact, its bill is chisel-tipped so that when the woodpecker is chiseling away, it creates a lot of sawdust. Now, normally in birds, the sawdust would enter the nostrils, but the woodpecker just so happens to have slit-like nostrils covered by fine wiry feathers to prevent the sawdust from entering. Then it just so happens the woodpecker's brain also comes equipped to be cushioned against impact. You see, the bones of the beak in most birds are joined to the cranium, which surrounds the brain. But in the woodpecker, the cranium and beak are separated by a sponge-like tissue that takes the shock of a hit each time the bird strikes its beak against a tree, acting as a kind of shock absorber, which scientists say is far better than anything man has ever invented. Then for added protection, the woodpecker has special muscles, which pull its brain case away from its beak every time it strikes a blow. But this is only part of the story. If the woodpecker's head were to twist even slightly while hammering the tree, the rotation of its head, combined with the force of pecking, would tear away the bird's brain. But for some reason, the woodpecker comes with incredibly coordinated neck muscles to keep its head perfectly straight, allowing it to withstand the enormous shock it inflicts on itself year in, year out, and thousands of times a day. Then, if that wasn't amazing enough, the woodpecker also has a very unique and long tongue to help it retrieve insects for food. But the question is, where does the woodpecker hold such a long tongue when it is not in use? It can't just roll it up and store it in its beak because there's no room. Well, it just so happens, the tongue of the woodpecker is anchored and stored in its right nostril when not in use. But when he uses it, it does so by emerging from the right nostril, then splitting into two halves. Then each half passes over one side of the back of its head underneath the skin, coming around underneath the beak, and then entering through a hole in the beak, with the two halves coming back together again. All that just to stick its tongue out.
The hummingbird. Did you know these little birds not only fly forwards or backwards or at a complete standstill, but they do so weighing only 1/10 of an ounce, most of which is just feathers? And yet somehow, twice a year, many of these hummingbirds go from North America to South America, crossing the Gulf of Mexico by beating their little wings 6 million times, 25 hours non-stop, 75 times every second, without ever resting once.
But that's not all. This obviously requires a lot of energy.
And to give you an idea just how much energy it requires, it has actually been calculated that if a 170-pound man expended the same amount of energy as the hummingbird, he would have to eat and digest 285 pounds of hamburger or 1,300 hamburgers or twice his weight in potatoes every single day just to maintain his body weight.
Then on top of that, he would have to be able to evaporate 100 pounds of perspiration per hour just to keep his skin temperature below the boiling point of water and from bursting into flames.
Not too bad for a bird that weighs only 1/10 of an ounce.
The Mallee bird. The Mallee bird lives in the Australian desert and does not appear to be anything special, that is, until you watch it in May or June. Here the male Mallee bird makes a pit in the sand with his claws about 3 feet deep and 6 feet long, and then starts filling it with vegetation and anything else it can find that will rot. Why? Well, for some reason, it knows that a pile of decaying matter will produce heat, and so once its heap reaches exactly 92 degrees Fahrenheit, it tells the female to go ahead and lay its eggs. And the male can do this because it just so happens he comes equipped with a thermometer in his beak so precise he can measure the temperature within half a degree. Then after the female lays about 30 eggs, The male covers them up with sand but then uncovers them every other day to turn the eggs. Then for the next 7 weeks he checks and maintains a constant 92 degrees in the nest because even a variance of a half of a degree would destroy the eggs. Then if that wasn't amazing enough, when each chick does come out of the egg, it does so through 2 feet of sand. And then when it gets to the top, it's fully able to fly on its own. And this is good because neither the mother nor father give it any attention, training, feeding, or care from the moment it hatches. And yet, for some reason, when it grows up, it does just as its parents did all over again.
The bronze cuckoo. Did you know the bronze cuckoo of New Zealand not only lays its eggs in the nest of other birds, leaving the other birds to take care of their young, but it even abandons the whole area by flying off thousands of miles to its off-season feeding grounds? Now, it's amazing how the babies even survive, but what's even more amazing is what the babies do after they hatch and become strong enough to fly. Mind you, without ever having seen their parents, with no adult bird to guide them, and no other birds going the same way, these young birds fly off taking the exact same route as their parents. Somehow, each March, the young bronze cuckoos set out on a 4,000-mile trip starting from New Zealand, flying west to the ocean's edge, and then out over the ocean over 1,250 miles of open sea. Then they arrive in northern Australia, turn north, fly to the ocean's edge again, and then start off for the direction of Papua New Guinea until they finally reach the Bismarck Archipelago. Keep in mind they never saw their parents, no one told them to do this, and just one slight error in direction on this 4,000-mile journey, and they would die. Why? Because not one of these birds know how to swim. Question: how could these birds ever have evolved slowly over time? And at what stage of development could any of them ever have survived unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those various birds clearly show, they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator, how about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, is acting like they're a few clowns short of a circus, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why Professor of Physics Frank Tipler said this.
When I began my career as a cosmologist some 20 years ago, I was a convinced atheist. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that one day I would be writing a book purporting to show that the central claims of Judeo-Christian theology are in fact true, that these claims are straightforward deductions of the laws of physics as we now understand them. I have been forced into these conclusions by the inexorable logic of my own special branch of physics.
Krohn translation? If you think all of life, including those birds, were created by chance, you're a few clowns short of a circus. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The fourth group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the fish. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the underwater creatures out there, and you tell me if they just accidentally swam onto the scene.
Gobies. Gobies are small fish, which during low tides, like to swim in rock pools on the edge of the ocean. And what's interesting about them is how they can jump from one tidal pool, over rocks, exposed above the water, into another rock pool. But what's even more amazing than that is when they do so, they always jump just the right amount, just at the right place, and just in the right direction, without ever landing on rock. Question: how can this fish know where to leap out of the water, and in what direction when it can't even see from one rock pool to the next? For some reason, even though much of the area around a pool is exposed rock, with no nearby pools beyond it, the goby always jumps at exactly just the right place every single time.
The decoy fish. Off the coast of Oahu, Hawaii lives a fish called the decoy fish. And it just so happens that this fish not only has a dorsal fin, but it has one that looks just like a small fish. It just so happens the fin is shaped like a fish head with a dot where the eye should be. And then it just so happens the fin membrane is notched between the first and second spine and resembles the mouth of a fish. Then it just so happens the fin has the color of a fish with a horizontal bottom, the fin being transparent so it will not appear to be attached to the decoy fish below it. and then it just so happens that the decoy fish knows how to use its dorsal fin as a lure to catch smaller fish by moving it in a special routine designed to attract them while even being able to change the color of its fin if it needs to.
The place fish. And speaking of the ability to change colors, there's a fish called the place fish that is so good at changing its color and camouflaging itself, that if it's placed on a checkered background, it can actually reproduce a checkered dark and light pattern of squares on its back, matching the exact coloring of the background.
The climbing perch. Then there's the climbing perch of Burma. Believe it or not, this fish will often leave the water, travel inland, and start climbing tree. And it can do this because it just so happens that each side of its head comes equipped with built-in storage tanks. And so before leaving the water, this little perch knows to fill these two storage tanks with water to keep its gills wet. And then it knows that if it doesn't find another pool to jump into pretty quick, then it will climb trees in search of pools of water that might be located in the crotches of a tree trunk to replenish the water in its tanks. And it can climb these trees in the first place, because it just so happens the climbing perch comes equipped with gill covers and spiny fins that enable it to cling to the bark of the trees so it can wiggle up and climb.
The archer fish. The archer fish is not only an attractive fish for aquariums, but it's an amazing fish as well. For some reason, this fish knows how to come up to the surface of the water, spit water out of its mouth, and shoot down a fly resting on a nearby leaf so that once it falls into the water it can eat it for food. But this is not half as amazing as what enables the fish to do this is the first place. It just so happens that the archer fish has a special mouth with a groove so that when the tongue is pressed up against the back of its mouth, the groove becomes a pea shooter that shoots straight forward. But that's not all. The gills then operate as a pump while the tip of the tongue acts as a valve that opens and closes so fast it produces an array of rapid-fire water bullets one by one. But wait a minute. Any physicist will tell you something's wrong here. How can this little fish hit anything, let alone with its eyes being under the surface of the water? For instance, if you take a pencil and place it in a glass, the pencil appears to bend as it enters the water. This is due to the diffraction between air and water. So this means the archerfish has the same problem. How can he shoot with accuracy when his eyes are underwater? Well, believe it or not, no one knows, but he does it anyway, every single time. In fact, the archerfish never misses an insect within a range of 4 feet, and can score hits up to a 12 feet away. Question. How could these fish ever have evolved slowly over time? And at what stage of development could any of them ever have survived unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those various fish clearly show they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't is acting like they don't have all their cornflakes in one box, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why cosmologist Ed Harrison said this. The fine-tuning of the universe provides prima facie evidence of deistic design. Take your choice, blind chance that requires multitudes of universes or design that requires only one. Many scientists, when they admit their views, incline toward the design argument. Here is the cosmological proof of the existence of God. 5. Krohn translation? If you think all of life including those fish were created by chance, you don't have all your cornflakes in one box. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The fifth group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the slimy creatures. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the slimy creatures out there and you tell me if they accidentally slithered onto the scene. But we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.